A dark chapter in Australian public administration has reached a turning point with a massive $548 million settlement in the RoboDebt class action lawsuit. Whilst this provides some financial relief for over 430,000 victims, big questions about justice still remain. Thomas Kutis asked Dr. Christopher Rudge, lecturer in law at the University of Sydney, whether this feels like enough compensation for the victims.
So yes, the RoboDebt scandal was a terrible event and one of the most tragic errors in governance in Australian history. And for the victims, it's undoubtedly a day of financial vindication and validation after a long and terrible ordeal, waiting and people suffering and enduring psychiatric harm. However, we must be careful not to confuse the headline figure in relation to this settlement with generosity. Although this is the largest settlement in Australian history, it's just a reflection of the enormous size of the cohort, which numbers 433,000 people, rather than the generosity of payments to the individuals. So, you know, empirical studies show that settlements rarely match the actual damage caused. And when you divide the amount here, which is over $500 million, between 433,000 people, the individual awards could be fairly modest, just over $1,000 per person.
A key part of this case was the claim that public officials deliberately misused their power. Can you briefly explain why that accusation is so serious?
Yeah, so in this second class action, which was an appeal of the first, in which the plaintiffs, who were victims of RoboDebt, brought a claim of misfeasance in public office against the government and the public servants, this particular claim is incredibly serious because it's the only legal wrong that applies to public officials who misuse their power. However, to prove this claim, you have to show that the public officials were more than simply incompetent. You have to show that the public officials had a specific state of mind and what the law has called conscious maladministration. You needed to show that the public officials consciously did the wrong thing. Now, the plaintiffs were very confident that they could prove this claim, and obviously the government defendant was prepared to settle on the basis of the evidence they foresaw coming. So it's a very serious accusation, but in this case it looks like it would have been successful. Otherwise, one might ask, why did the government settle?
The government chose to pay this huge sum instead of fighting the case in court. Why do you think they decided to settle now after all these years?
Well, it's interesting. In the first RoboDebt settlement case back in 2019, there wasn't enough evidence at that time for the claim of misfeasance in public office to be litigated. It was actually submitted by the class action applicants in the original class action, but the court saw that stated that the prospects of success for that claim were low, and so they abandoned that claim. However, after the RoboDebt Royal Commission, new evidence emerged that allowed this claim to be much more, promising. And so why did the government settle now? Well, I've said that the settlement can be seen as the price the government was willing to pay to avoid more public embarrassment and another public trial regarding RoboDebt. And so it was likely a combination of legal advice that suggested they would potentially lose in this case, as well as the concern for a political humiliation on the part of the current government. And so I think that is why ultimately they chose to pay this sum of money, to avoid further defence requirements that the government would, at this point, they would have to defend fighting the victims again, and they might be exposed to more liability.
Because this was settled out of court, you've said we might never get the full story. What is the most important thing we now won't find out? What do you think?
Well, Robodebt was, as the Royal Commission found, a terrible project, a terrible error that the government imposed on citizens. The key question that remains unanswered was whether those who designed the scheme and who were responsible for its continued administration through many complaints and many administrative appeal tribunals declaring that it was unlawful or at least questionable, the question remaining was whether they did this on purpose. Did anyone in the public service have knowledge of the illegality or unlawfulness of the scheme and continue without any change in their decision making or in their processes? And with that, with the case now settled and the claims dropped, we will never be able to examine that question, whether public servants knowingly acted unlawfully. So the settlement ensures that the central legal claim will never be tested. And that represents an instance of accountability evasion for those who designed the scheme and those who remain responsible for the government's actions, which includes the present government, even though the past government was largely, or in fact, almost entirely, administration responsible for Robodebt.
Many victims want to see the individuals behind Robodebt held responsible. Is there still any chance of that happening in the future or now?
Well, we have one last clear chance, and that lies with the National Anti-Corruption Commission. So the NAC has committed, after many false steps, to investigating six persons who were referred to it by the Robodebt Royal Commission and Commissioner Catherine Holmes. The allegations or circumstances in which those referrals have arisen is still a secret. The details are contained in a sealed section of the Robodebt Royal Commission report. And NAC would now have in its possession those details, and it may be conducting private hearings right now. So we await the results of any such private hearings. I would be very keen for public hearings to take place, but the NAC doesn't need to do those. So if all goes as well as it can, the NAC will make findings that one or more or all of the six referred individuals engaged in corruption, which is defined as a breach of the public trust, when they were administering the Robodebt scheme. And if that occurs, then it's possible they could also be referred to criminal prosecution. And that would be a reason for many of the victims to feel that there has been accountability.
Looking at the big picture, the Royal Commission found this scheme not only caused harm to many. So how can we make sure that this corruption doesn't happen again?
Well, I think that it is actually very likely that something like Robodebt could occur again. But to avoid it, we really need to see a complete paradigm shift in the way that we approach welfare in Australia and the social security system. The principle I think should be espoused within the Department of Human Services, now Services Australia, and the Departments of Social Security is that there is almost negligible fraud in the system, and a working assumption should be that people are entitled to the support they receive, and there should be a much higher threshold for fraud investigation. What we have seen through Robodebt and several other welfare scandals is that the money spent on investigating a suspected low-level fraud, which, by the way, turns out to be false suspicion, is so much greater than the cost of not investigating at all. The question arises, is the government overly paranoid about small, instances of suspected fraud and chasing it in a way that's unfinancial? I think that's what we've learned over these last 10 years. And so if we are to learn anything, we should, even those who are very, very strict economic conservatives can see the logic in not spending so much in attempting to find such low-level fraud, especially when it turns out to be baseless. And so I think, but I'm not thinking of it economically. I'm thinking of it legally. If we are to avoid these scandals in the future, the policy to Social Security needs to comply with the law. And this relies on the departments not single-mindedly approaching every instance of an overpayment as an opportunity to prosecute or to claw back money. Mistakes happen. The system has room and elasticity for those mistakes. And the assumption should be that any overpayments were in error. That's how we avoid this.
Dr. Christopher Rudge, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Dr. Christopher Rudge, lecturer in law at the University of Sydney, speaking there with Thomas Kutters.